Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
I'm reading now from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 7, text 13. Tribhir gunamayar bhavair ebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitang nabhijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. Translation. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Purport. The whole world is enchanted by the three modes of material nature. Those who are bewildered by these three modes cannot understand that transcendental to this material nature is the Supreme Lord Krishna. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three modes of material nature. Those who are purely in the mode of goodness are called brahmanas. Those who are purely in the mode of passion are called kshatriyas. Those who are in the modes of both passion and ignorance are called vaishyas. Those who are less than that, so those who are completely in ignorance are called shudras, and those who are less than that are animals or animal life. However, these designations are not permanent. I may either be a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or whatever. In any case, this life is temporary. But although life is temporary, and we do not know what we are going to be in the next life, by the spell of this illusory energy, we consider ourselves in terms of this bodily conception of life, and thus we think that we are American, Indian, Russian, or brahmana, Hindu, Muslim, etc. And if we become entangled with the modes of material nature, then we forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is behind all these modes. So, Lord Krishna says that living entities deluded by these three modes of nature do not understand that behind the material background is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many different kinds of living entities, human beings, demigods, animals, etc., and each and every one of them is under the influence of material nature, and all of them have forgotten the transcendental personality of Godhead. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, and even those who are in the mode of goodness, cannot go beyond the impersonal Brahman conception of the Absolute Truth. They are bewildered before the Supreme Lord in His personal feature, which possesses all beauty, opulence, knowledge, strength, fame, and renunciation. When even those who are in goodness cannot understand, what hope is there for those in passion and ignorance? Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all these three modes of material nature, and those who are truly established in Krishna consciousness are actually liberated. Tribhir gunamayar bhavair abhi sarvamidam jagat mohitang nabhijanati mamebhya paramabhyayam. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. In this verse, as in many verses in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam, the topic of Maya is discussed, the topic of the three modes of material nature is discussed. So, what is this Maya, illusion? What are the modes of nature? Where are they? We can't touch them, taste them, smell them, feel them, can't measure it. What is it? Krishna explains here in Bhagavad Gita that this illusion, or the power of Maya, it is all pervasive throughout the whole universe, and it intensely influences everything that every living being does, the whole consciousness of the living beings is permeated by and adversely influenced by this Maya. So this is a dimension of existence that it is vital for us to understand. But we don't know. That's the nature of illusion. We're so much in illusion that we're not even aware that we're illusioned. And we have to hear from Bhagavad Gita even to understand that we are illusioned. Now, with our consciousness, we have certain perceptions. These perceptions, they go on, we don't think about this all the time, but when someone draws it to our attention, we think about, our consciousness is unfolding in a continuous stream of time. Time should be going on uniformly. That's presumed. Although if something is very difficult or very unpleasant, it seems to take a long time, seems to drag out. And if something is very enjoyable, we say, oh, the time just seemed to pass, just like that. That's the nature of this world. Things we enjoy go quickly and things we suffer seem to go more slowly. Although, according to any chronometer, it would be the same time, but it's experienced differently. So we experience everything via consciousness. Consciousness is the very platform of experience. Within time, within space, we perceive space, length, breadth, and depth. We perceive everything via the senses. So these are various dimensions of our existence. But Krishna says here that there is another whole parameter of our existence that we're not even aware of. And just like time and space, we can't imagine time without space, and we can't imagine space without time. But there is another factor, and that is consciousness is another very fact that we are aware. And then the illusion by which we perceive ourselves to be the enjoyer of all of this. What is this illusion? This is summarized, the attitude which we adopt in illusion, this is summarized by Krishna, the attitude of Ishvaro Aham Aham Bhogi. I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. Another common summary of this attitude of the jiva in illusion is ahammamiti, I and mine, this way of thinking. Or simply it's sometimes just said ahamta, thinking in terms of me and me. That's all that's important. Or ahankar. That ahankar means that which makes the sense of I-ness. So over preoccupation with ourself, that means to see everything out of perspective. Talking about dimensions, seeing in two dimensions, if we take length, breadth, and depth as three dimensions, so seeing in two dimensions, it's a different way of seeing. Prior to, at least in Europe, in painting, prior to the Renaissance, there was two-dimensional paintings. If you go back to the times of the Black Plague and Hieronymus Bosch and all those kind of painters, you'll see they paint in two dimensions. And then someone got a good idea, revived from the Greeks, and started making three-dimensional paintings. So it's a whole different way of seeing things, which you didn't see before. If you see of course the painting is in two dimensions, but it gives the effect of three dimensions. So it's a whole different effect, which we're not aware of. Someone who is colorblind sees in black and white, they're not aware of color. If they could be made aware of color, then a whole world of experience would be opened up to them that they couldn't imagine. So Krishna is speaking here about himself and the illusion by which we do not experience Krishna. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is in everything. In one sense, Krishna is everything. Mayate tamidam sarvam jagada vyaktam murtinamat sthani sarva bhutani nachaham teshvavastitah. Everything is Krishna. Krishna is in everything, but in another sense, Krishna is aloof from everything. But the overwhelming fact of existence by which everything exists is Krishna. The only reason for our existence is to please Krishna, to be with Krishna. But we are in the great illusion of seeing everything, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, experiencing, desiring, minus Krishna, which you really miss a lot. In fact, you miss everything that's worth being cognizant of. So we can just imagine, what is the difference? Someone who is congenitally blind, he never, in this lifetime, never saw anything. So he can't imagine what it means to see something. He can hear other people talking about seeing, but he can't see. Even in his dreams, he doesn't see. Or someone who is congenitally deaf, they can't imagine what it means to hear. But if they got that facility, they would feel that, I was missing so much. There's so much of life that I was cut off from. But we don't realize that we are cut off from something which is more of a gift than the gift of sight to a blind man, more than the gift of hearing to a deaf man. That is Krishna. But we're not aware of Krishna due to the illusion that we're also not aware of. We're stuck here in this world of illusion. But being stuck in this world of illusion, it's not exactly like being congenitally blind. It's more like closing our eyes and then saying that there's nothing to see. I can't see anything. Can't see a thing. There's nothing to be seen. It's not that there's nothing to be seen, but that we don't open our eyes. Or the example of Plato's cave, someone can tell you, come on, come out and see. No, staying here. So, we have the opportunity, but Tribhir Gunamaya Bhavai, due to the influence of the three modes of material nature, we become conditioned to think of ourselves in terms of the present matrix of the modes that we misidentify under the power of illusion to be ourselves. So we miss Krishna. Just like the blind man is missing so much. The deaf man. What if we were born with all our senses inactive? Can't see, can't, there's no sense of touch. Helen Keller, at least she had a sense of touch, right? But if all the senses were inactive, then what would we say? We'd probably say the person is brain dead. Unless there's some sensual input, then how can the consciousness act at all? That's something like what the Mayavadis want to do. They want to have consciousness without senses. You just shut down all your senses one by one and you just remain with consciousness. Maybe we can suggest that to them, a mechanical method of self-realization. You just zap the areas in your brain, the area meant for seeing, and then the one for touching, the sense of touch, and then no senses left, and bliss, Brahman. But it's unimaginable, isn't it? Just consciousness, and they say that's a state of bliss, but it doesn't sound very blissful, actually. I mean, definitely the situation of this material world that we're in, our touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, thinking, and so on, it doesn't produce anything blissful, and in fact, it seems to produce a lot of suffering. But just to turn it off, does that automatically mean bliss? That you don't like what's in this world? Okay, chop off your ears and then gouge out your eyes, and then you can be happy. But it doesn't, it's not a very advisable thing to do. So even if someone wanted to experiment, they wouldn't be able to tell us, does it work? Stopping all our senses, because then you can't talk either. So, this is our situation. We are very busy interacting our senses with the sense objects, but we miss the whole point. The whole point is Krishna. We don't even know that we're in illusion. It's just like seeing. All right, if we see, all right, let's look. There's a door there. There is a door. So we look and we see the door. And it's obvious. It's unless you get a philosopher, then it's obvious just by seeing it that there's a door there. Of course, a philosopher has problem with everything, normal and obvious. But okay, there's a door there. Now, if you can't see, you can't see the obvious. So similarly, if we can't understand Krishna, we're missing the obvious. It should be obvious that there is Krishna. But we don't see Krishna because we are in the illusion of not wanting to see Krishna. So there are all these dimensions of existence. We can't imagine what would it be like if there was no time? What would it be like if there was no space? What would it be like if there's no Krishna? But there's no Krishna. We don't see Krishna. We don't touch Krishna. We don't smell Krishna. We don't feel Krishna. So that means there's no Krishna. It's like the blind man saying, I don't see, therefore there's no such thing as sight. That is our sin. But no one sees Krishna. It's like a group of blind men. They all get together and say, see, we're all blind and we all agree there's nothing, all this seeing is just a few mad people talking about seeing. obviously there's no such thing. Because we're all together here and we all know there's no such thing as seeing. It's just something which some people imagined as a kind of psychological crutch. But actually Krishna is a fact. And to one who sees Krishna, who experiences Krishna, then it just seems absurd that anyone could even not experience Krishna or suggest that there is no Krishna. Srila Prabhupada very patiently, again and again and again, explained to us and to anyone who is willing to listen, and not only to people who were willing to listen, but he spoke even to people who weren't very interested in listening. He preached very insistently and explained that we are not the body, we're eternal spirit soul, there's the eternal controller, we are controlled, there is a controller, we are... all these basic points he would explain. That was his great mercy. But he didn't need any logical or shastric understanding to experience Krishna. He's always experiencing Krishna. And for our benefit, he would try to help us revive our dormant Krishna consciousness. But actually we're all in a crippled state where that which should be most obvious, we can't perceive it at all. We can begin to perceive it by the process of hearing. Shravanadi shuddha chitte kareye yodoy. By the process of hearing, then gradually the heart becomes cleansed, and that Krishna prema, which is the natural condition of the soul to be blissful in relationship to Krishna, that becomes revived. Otherwise, we're in this very strange position of being in this material world. We don't know who we are. We don't know why we're here. We're not aware that there's any purpose of life. It's a crippled position. It's like the person who's blind. They can't imagine what it's like to see, which should be the most obvious thing, to see. But it should be the most obvious thing that we know who we are. We know why we're in this mess. We understand that it's a mess that in this material world, that we're in a very troubled situation. We understand the process to get out from it. That should be the most normal. If we're going to talk about being intelligent, that should be the most normal thing. That, okay, we're in this position, but we're in this position because of this reason, and this is what we have to do to get out of this difficulty. But we don't even perceive, and we take that the purpose of life, even if we don't think about the purpose of life, but we just take it for granted that interacting the senses with their objects for some petty pleasure, that's it. And you go to work, you come back, and then you watch TV, and then you go to sleep, and then the next morning you get up and you go to work, and that's life. And, well, there was a German schoolboy about, 2 years ago, maybe a little less than that, who imitated some American schoolboys and pulled out a gun and shot a whole bunch of people dead. And he gave a statement after doing that, that anyway, what's the point? They make you work all your life, and when you're old and worn out, then you retire. And what is there anyway? So it's a bit intelligent to ask the question. It wasn't a very intelligent response. He should have got a Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he could have had a more intelligent response to the problem of the big why. But most people are not even thinking like that. And even if they start to think, how far can you get? Once you wander into philosophy, you're really in a big, you think you're in a big mess, but once you wander into philosophy, you get into a huge, much bigger mess, where all these philosophers are all arguing with each other, and this way, that way, and as soon as someone brings up an argument, someone finds some fault with it, and then someone finds a fault with that other argument, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And the philosophers, they're going up and down and round and about and in circles and all kinds of, it's a big tangle. And like I say, you can't even really, once you, anyone can see the door is there, it's obvious to anyone except a philosopher who would argue against that. And there may be so many reasons they can give that actually, how can you be sure you're actually perceiving it, and maybe an illusion, and do you really exist, and anyway, what is a door? And if you see from another perspective, it's mostly space, according to, if you get into atomic physics, then it's mostly space there, but then why can't you walk through it? If it's mostly space, there's a few electrons getting in the way here and there. So it's such a situation that we're in that once you try to get to understand what it is and get out of it, you become more entangled and more confused. Or you might adopt some pseudo-philosophy or partial philosophy and then become some fanatic follower of some bizarre idea, and that doesn't solve the problem either. Krishna gives the solution to all of this in the next verse, which is a very well-known verse, at least among the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya duratya yamam eva ye prapadyante maya metam taranti te. That maya is very difficult to overcome, but if we surrender to Krishna, then we can overcome. So that's the solution, the simple solution to the incredibly complex problem that we are in, that we're missing the point so badly that it causes, it's not just one life, you might be born blind in one life, but we are blind to knowledge of reality, life after life after life. In every single lifetime, we're missing the point. We're congenitally ignorant. And so, just like a blind person is, cannot imagine what is the sense of sight, so he takes that consciousness and the exercise of consciousness and life itself is something which, in which seeing, it's not part of the paradigm. He's just completely unaware of that. So in the same way, we're blind to Krishna. So you can live without seeing. You can't live without hearing. But to live without Krishna, to live without Krishna consciousness, it's such a big loss. Such a great loss. It's for those who are aware of Krishna, then it's much, much worse than being blind or being deaf or being dumb. We missed everything. We missed the whole point. But people in illusion, they just completely miss this. This power of Maya is another dimension altogether, and beyond that is Krishna. So this Krishna consciousness is to be awakened by the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. There's a verse. What is that? I had it written down. This is from Sri Yamunacharya, which is quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which states this same point in another way. Ulangita trivida sima utashishai. Sambhavanam tava parivradhima swabhava maya balena bhavitapi niguhyamanam pashanti kejidanisham twadananya bhavaha. Krishna is beyond the three limiting factors which are variously explained as time, space, and overall perception. These are the dimensions in which we exercise our consciousness, our awareness. There's time, there is space, and there is thought or perception. So we presume that, well, this is everything. This is all there is. But beyond that is Krishna. We may say that, well, there's no need to posit there's anything beyond that. Why? We're here, so that's it. Why do we need to bring any God into the picture? This is the modern or not so modern atheistic, supposedly scientific outlook. We don't need any God to explain everything. We can explain everything by science, which is really, although such persons trumpet this right loudly, they're really just trumpeting their ignorance. Because we have needs more. We have the need, spiritual needs. We are persons. We are not simply combinations of chemicals, although they would like to announce like that. So we have need, we have a spiritual need. We are lacking Krishna. Just like when we're thirsty, we lack water, we need water. So we have an emptiness that should be filled up by Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So everything within material existence is within these three limits. But Krishna is beyond this. Time, space, and thought. Krishna is of a nature that is beyond our ability to even imagine. The story of the frog in the well. How big could another well be? Two times this well, five times this well. He can't, because he only has experience of a well, he cannot imagine that there is an ocean which is practically unlimitedly greater. So because we only have we in our present situation only have experience of this material world, we cannot imagine that there is Krishna who is unlimitedly greater than anything we have seen, heard, touched, smelt, or felt, or conceived of in our present situation. And also the happiness of Krishna consciousness, we cannot imagine, because we think happiness is coming into a warm house from the cold, or happiness is sex, or some nice food, it's passing stool after constipation for 5 days, or getting into a toilet before it bursts out if you have the other problem. We have a very constricted idea of happiness. We're in the chains of Maya by which our whole conceptualization of reality is just very, very small. So the jiva who is meant for unlimited happiness in relationship to Krishna thinks that if he can reach the toilet before it bursts out, that is happiness. For instance, that is happiness. He doesn't have any idea of the unlimited bliss in relationship with Krishna, who is unsurpassed, unequaled. Krishna is always transcendental. That's the important point, that we think that everything within material nature, that is reality. There's nothing beyond this. But this material nature is Krishna's external energy. There is his internal energy to which we actually belong, but we misidentify ourselves with this external energy. And therefore we suffer. We cut ourselves off from Krishna. So Krishna is hidden by this maya. Maya javani kachanam adhokshajam avyayam nalakshase murhadrisha nato natyadharo yata. Krishna is covered by the potency, the covering potency of maya, and therefore foolish people cannot see him. Because he's beyond the modes of material nature, persons whose conception is only within the material nature cannot conceive of him. The whole idea that, well, we never saw God, we looked through our telescope, we looked through our microscope, we have our litmus paper, and we have our Hubble telescopes. We didn't see any God. But the whole proposition that we should be able to see God while we're within mundane consciousness is self-defeating, because the very nature of God is that he's beyond this material nature. So, although persons who are restricted by their own attachment to this material world cannot even begin to conceive of seeing Krishna, they may say, well, where's God? Show me. But they have no idea what it means to see God. They think it's like seeing something on a TV screen, you see, or seeing anything of this world. But they don't know the very nature of God. So Krishna, he remains sealed off from such people. Nato natyadharo yata. They can see God, but even if they were to see him, they wouldn't recognize him. Even if, not that Krishna is going to come and bow down and say, yes, my dear atheist, I'm here on your order. But they wouldn't recognize him because they're not equipped to recognize him. Duryodhana saw Krishna umpteen times. He never recognized that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even when Krishna showed Duryodhana his inconceivable opulence, Duryodhana thought, just some magic trick, that's all. There's so many magicians. He's just making some illusion, that's all. So here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching us, exhorting us, practically he takes the dignified role of a guru, but he's really pushing Arjuna. It's not just some intellectual discussion to fill up the time before the battle starts. But Krishna wants that Arjuna should come out of the ignorance of not recognizing himself, Krishna. Come out of that ignorance. As long as we remain attached to the limited and limiting conceptions of this world, then we cannot understand Krishna. We have to go beyond that. Ulangita trividha sima utashishai. We have to go. Krishna is beyond any conceptions of this material world. We have to go beyond those conceptions. If we remain locked up in our material way of thinking, then we cannot begin to understand Krishna. What is Krishna doing? He's putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. Ah, Jai, very good. Sounds absurd. But this is a very good example that the materialist thinks, well, it's not possible because the laws of physics don't allow that you can put an elephant through an eye of a needle. But Krishna is not under the laws of physics. Even that is a great... You can't prove scientifically that the laws of physics apply in all times, places and circumstances. You can't prove it scientifically or any other way. So Krishna is beyond the what we think should be. That is his great glory. He appears as Nrsimhadev. Just to show the atheist Hiranyakashipu, you made so many calculations and you thought you had me outsmarted. No. You won't be killed by human or animal? Okay. You never heard of a man-lion? Now you heard of one. Too late for you. You're not going to be killed indoors or outdoors? You thought you were so intelligent? How about on the veranda? You're not going to be killed in the day or the night? Well, what about the twilight? And so on and so on and so on. Hiranyakashipu, the great atheist of his age, met the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he didn't recognize him. How could he recognize him? He's been denying him that he can even exist, and then how will he recognize him? So, the devotees recognize. Who's going to kill Hiranyakashipu? It's only the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going to do that. So he did that. But the non-devotees, they won't recognize. Even if the Supreme Lord comes and personally rips their intestines to pieces, they still won't agree. Yes, actually you are God. They'd rather have their intestines ripped to pieces than simply recognize the simple fact that there is the Supreme Lord who's superior to them. So he graphically demonstrates it. Just like Kamsa, he said that, you know, he got all this news from Vrindavan, you see that. Hiranyakashipu said that about Hiranyaksha. You see this Vishnu, he killed my brother. He was just a little inattentive, that's all. Otherwise my brother should have surely been competent to kill him. So Kamsa, he also said that, you see this, people are praising this Krishna, then he just by luck and chance, he managed to kill all these demons, and they make a big thing out of him. There's this little water snake called Kaliya, which he managed to subdue. And they'll promote themselves. I'm so great, the master of the master of the master. And when it comes to Krishna, they'll say, well, even if he can do that, well, you see, that's he's not really so great. It's not such a great thing. So they're envious. What is the cause of our being in this great illusion? We're envious of Krishna. We should not be envious of Krishna. This whole illusion, how does it come about? Because we want to enjoy separately from Krishna. So Krishna is the vital principle. By his energy, everything is upheld in this world. And even Maya is upheld. Daivi esha gunamai mama maya. This Krishna, it's his energy. He puts that in place because we want it to be in place. But we don't see Krishna. The very nature of Maya is that we take it to be, the very nature of illusion is that we take this world to be real to an extent that it is not. That is the very nature of illusion. But underlying that is Krishna. And to recognize Krishna, to find Krishna, that is the only thing that we really need to do in all times and all places and all circumstances. We don't really need to do anything else. That's all we need to do. But it seems to us to be a very, very difficult job. Just like for a congenitally blind person, to even think of seeing is something inconceivable for him. So there are different types of congenitally blind people. One type, they may have the power to see, but due to means that their apparatus is there, but there may be something akin to a cataract from birth. So if that is some unwanted tissue grows over the eye, so they can't see. So agyanatim irandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. We pray to the guru who, by applying the ointment that destroys the cataract, restores the ability to see. It is there dormant within us. So we all are by nature intimately connected with Krishna. But we are in a situation in which we think that we have no relationship with Krishna, to the extent that we may, of course everyone sitting here has heard of Krishna, but there are many, many people, and if we include all the non-humans, there are practically unlimited number of jivas, even on this planet, what to speak of the whole universe, what to speak of all the material universes, who are quite unaware of Krishna. That doesn't mean that there is no Krishna, but that Krishna's illusory energy is doing her job very competently. It is the job of the devotees to fight with Maya, to individually, in their own individual life, to overcome the power of Maya, and to instruct other persons so that they can start to see Krishna's hand in everything. Krishna is real. It's not just some imagination or some Indian philosophy. But to see Krishna means to live life to the fullest. How much we're missing if we can't see? How much we're missing if we can't hear? How much are we missing if we can't smell? So how much are we missing if we miss Krishna? We miss everything. Then our touching, smelling, tasting, feeling, hearing, it's all empty without Krishna. But in illusion we think that there's no God is required. We don't need any God. We're going on with our life. We're touching, smelling, feeling, everything's nice. We don't need God. So we, due to the power of illusion, we don't understand how we do desperately need Krishna. How much we're suffering. How much we're cut off from the happiness, which is our natural state, simply because we're not aware of Krishna. So that may take some training to become aware of Krishna. Just like if someone, suddenly they can see, still they need some orientation. They need some training how to relate to a world which was very different to the world that they, as how they perceived it, just prior to that. It'll take some use to getting used to. So Krishna, to attain Krishna is far more than a blind person attaining sight or a deaf person attaining the sense of hearing. So we need guidance to how to revive our Krishna consciousness, how to act in Krishna consciousness. This is all required. Hare Krishna. Oh, I'm over time. Any question, comment, please? Yeah, please. Maya is, sometimes we hear that we should fight Maya, sometimes we hear that we should, Maya is Krishna's energy, so we should just try to avoid it. Where do we hear that last statement? We can't avoid Maya. Maya's everywhere. How can we avoid Maya? To come out from her influence, but she won't let us go very easily, so we have to fight. Yeah, that is there, that's stated in Gita and Bhagavad Gita. Jnanasinam, we should take the sword of knowledge and cut through all this. That language is always given. That jahi shatru mahabaho kama rupa durasadam. Krishna addresses Arjuna that you should fight and defeat this enemy in the form of desire, material desire. So this is the language used throughout Shastra. In other words, it's a conscious and very active endeavor to overcome Maya. It's not just a matter of just avoiding and ignoring, because we can do that, but it's just like if there's someone who's persistently determined to make your life miserable. You may have come across people like that in your life. Maybe not you, because when you're big, tall, and strong, people don't usually do that. But you can try and avoid them, but because they've decided to make your life miserable, they don't avoid you. So you're going to have to become proactive, to use that out-of-date, fashionable language. You're going to have to do it. Maybe you're going to have to make a complaint to someone, or when they say nasty things to you, think of nasty things to say back, or what do you? If you're just neutral, of course, as devotees, we might just not take such people very seriously. But the point is, they'll go on. If they're determined to harass you, they'll go on. So Maya, her very duty is to harass us. And simply saying, we'll avoid. How can you avoid? This whole world is the world of Maya. Then how can you avoid? We accept Maya by our attitude that I want to enjoy. So we have to fight that. The fight is actually with our own ignorance. And also we have to fight the Maya within others by preaching Krishna consciousness. What is the connection between the personality of Kali and Maya Devi? A close one. A close one. It's a very close one. The personality of Kali, his service is to make things particularly miserable. He's the Zeitgeist of Kali. Did I say that? Was that okay? All right. You need a German to pronounce it properly. It is used in English also, that word, but not with proper German pronunciation. In English you just say Zeitgeist, but anyway, it's he's the personification of the spirit of the age, which is just to be totally decadent and nasty. That is the personality of Kali. Whereas we don't hear about the personality of Satya Yoga. Presumably there is one, but he presents Maya in a different way. Another aspect of Maya. Not down in the modes of ignorance, but Tribhir Guna Maya. Sattva-guna is also an aspect of Maya. So intensely the effect of Maya is seen in this Kali Yuga. The mode of ignorance becomes very intense. But Sattva-guna, that's also a kind of illusion, because it's not intense. It feels nice. That's stated in Bhagavad Gita that one in Sattva-guna one becomes conditioned by a sense of happiness. So that's also binds us to this world. Yeah.
Krishna also says Maya Dakshina Prakshana, that Maya works under his direction. So
there's a subtle difference there. He says material nature works under my direction. Maya by my Adhyakshena, by my supervision. It's actually the Sanskrit word and the English word. It's the same linguistic. Adhyaksha means to see from above. So, Maya Adhyakshena, by my supervision, Prakriti, material nature, Suyate, brings into being. Sacharacharam, all that is the manifestations of Prakriti, moving and non-moving.
So Maya, especially, shouldn't fight against Maya. Sometimes we just have to see Krishna's arrangement behind the actions of material nature, not fight against them.
That's also an aspect, yeah. To see Krishna's hand in everything. When we say fight against Maya, that doesn't mean that we're trying to counteract the laws of physics. For instance, a train is coming and we stand on the track and we're going to push it back. We're fighting Maya. According to the laws of material nature, a train which is coming toward us at 150 kilometers an hour, we're not going to be able to push it back. We're going to get flattened. And then we come to the biology class of how all the impact of a train 150 kilometers an hour on a human body, what happens post-mortem. So fighting Maya doesn't mean that we are trying to counteract what are nowadays known as the laws of physics and so on, but rather that we are fighting the illusion of not seeing Krishna behind everything and not understanding the purpose of Maya and not being illusioned ourselves into thinking Ishvaroham aham bhogi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So fighting Maya doesn't mean that we're trying to change the way that Maya functions, but rather we're trying to fight against the way she influences the way our perception of everything functions, the way our consciousness functions. Hare Krishna. It seems hard, yeah. Seems very hard, yeah. It's like, well, the example can be given that someone who is not, who cannot see, it seems very hard for, if his sight is being restored, then it's a huge proposition. You can, the sight, which is, if the sight is given, it's not just enough that you see, but then you've got, there are all kinds of associations that come with sight, which we have to put them all in place, and it's actually like entering another dimension of existence. For a person who's never seen, if suddenly they have sight, it's not, they have to learn how other people perceive the world. And it may be very, very difficult. And they may think, oh, it's too much, I'll just go back to being blind. I was happy enough as I was. It was so, in Maya there is a state of happiness, or a condition of thinking that we're happy. And to undertake Krishna consciousness, we have to let go of that sense of happiness. And it seems to us that there's not something we want to let go, so we hold on to it. So it seems very difficult to give up Maya, because it seems to us very painful. And we can't imagine what's on the other side. There's a fear also. So we have to develop that faith by association with devotees, by hearing, and take the plunge, as they say, and not be deluded by what seems to be. Maya means that which is not, it just seems to be. It seems that if I had a big, strong, healthy body and a beautiful wife and lots of money, I'd be happy. But there are many people in the world who have these things, and they're not at all happy. Something is clearly wrong with our perception of the world. Something's, so seeing that, then we have to reconstrue our whole perception of the world. That's the proposition that Krishna makes in Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna.